It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. When Karen Hacker took over as the director of the Allegheny County Health Department last fall, she said she was committed to reinvigorating the health department and that she wasn't hired to do business as usual. Since then, she has pledged to deal head-on with issues like obesity and smoking, but those are only a couple of the many health concerns facing the citizens of Allegheny County. As she embarks on her first full calendar year in her new position, we invited Karen Hacker to join us for a conversation in Studio A. Karen Hacker, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
And if you have a comment or question for Karen Hacker, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is ESSPGH@WESA.FM, and you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at #EPLive. What are the health concerns that you think the new director of the Allegheny County Health Department should make a priority in 2014? 412-246-2002, the number to call. Karen Hacker, you have spent much of your life in the New England area. You are a Yale graduate. You did your residency at Boston City Hospital after attending medical school at Northwestern University in your native Chicago. You taught at Harvard Medical School. You worked in the health field in Los Angeles. So what interested you in coming to Pittsburgh to work here?
Well, it's an interesting question, and you can imagine a lot of people ask it.
Sure.
I think for me, I'm at a time in my own career, in my own life, where I'm really fascinated by the relationship in particular between public health and the healthcare delivery system. Some folks are calling this population health. We in public health have called it population health for a long time. I think with the Affordable Care Act, it's a very unique time in medical healthcare history. The public health system in Massachusetts is pretty limited. We don't have a county structure. We only have cities and towns, and so most of them have health departments, sometimes about three people in them, literally, to do what they need to do. So I was really looking for an opportunity to be in a place that valued public health and in a leadership position. And to be honest, I kind of threw my hat in the ring, really not expecting that it was going to go anywhere. Came to visit and was recruited heavily to join the team. And I think one of the things I've been most impressed about thus far is that people are really supporting my making changes in the health department. And at this point in time, nationally, a lot of health departments are really suffering. And so to really have the opportunity to really see if we can make this place a new and invigorated health department is pretty exciting.
What are the biggest challenges that you see as you settle into your new position? What are the biggest challenges that you face?
I think there are internal challenges and external challenges, so I'll speak a little about both of them. I don't know if folks have looked a lot at the data that we have about Allegheny County and its health, but we still have a number of issues that we really need to move the needle on. We have big issues in health inequalities across our county, including geographic as well as racial, as well as economic. We have challenges in environmental health and air and water. We have challenges in terms of everything from smoking and other forms of preventive care, what to do with folks who currently don't have access to the healthcare delivery system, and our preventive measures aren't that great. And in particular, I'm very interested in the whole area of obesity and physical activity, and it doesn't take much to recognize that we've got problems there. On an internal level, though, the department itself really lacks a lot of infrastructure, and it needs rebuilding. So I'm in the process of hiring a leadership team, which actually I did not have when I arrived.
You are on record as stating it is your intention to improve air quality in Allegheny County, that that is a priority for you. So how do you go about doing that?
Well, I think we have a pretty vigorous air department that has been doing a very good job, and I've spoken a lot to folks about this issue, many of the advocacy groups. This is challenging. We have various industries in our county that are technically dirty industries, no matter how you cut it, if you're making Coke. And we also have challenges because a lot of Eastern and parts of Ohio have some of those same types of industries, and unfortunately, our weather patterns put us in harm's way that way. I think we've made some incredible strides if you look at the data, but we still have a lot of work to do. And I think that we have a great department. I have a new director of environmental health who's really dedicated to this. And we will just keep fighting the good fight to get this done.
And in order to fight the problem or address the problem, what do you have to do specifically? Are we talking about tightening emission standards? What are you in a position to do as
– So we basically do the regulation side of the mm-hmm. coin. And that literally means, for those who aren't aware, for example, Coke plants, Coke factories, it literally means having inspectors on site during daylight hours, because the way that you actually do your assessments is by looking at the smoke that's emanating from the batteries. And you look at the density of the smoke. And that's how you make a judgment. And if you have consistently problems with that, then you basically ask that organization to either fix the problem or pay a penalty. And if things get really bad and you don't see progress being made, then you have other legal action that you can take. So that's really the strategies that we have. You can also do regulation. And those can include different challenges, obviously, that we'll try to pursue. One of the newest areas that we're interested in is fracking. There is fracking all around us, as people probably know. And one of the things we just got passed through our county council was the ability to get notification of all the different milestones that go on with fracking, which is already something that industry gives to the state but was not telling the county. So that gives us an opportunity to then monitor what's going on and be there when we need to be there.
And what about water quality as well as air quality? There is, as you mentioned, a lot of industry here, and there is hydraulic fracturing, which many feel is harmful to the environment and threatens the water supply. The county executive, Rich Fitzgerald, is very much in favor of fracking. How will you balance what could be conflicting priorities?
So first of all, I think it's important to know where our regulation actually begins and ends. And we don't have any authority over determining where and when fracking takes place. So what we are responsible for is water quality. Most of the challenges that folks have probably read about – well, first of all, I would say that in general, the data that's available on the health effects of fracking is still very much in its infancy. I think part of what we need to do is get a lot better studies going. The other thing is that the water table that you're talking about in most cases in our county will not – it's not going to be that much of a problem because of the population density. So we don't even have, for example, a lot of septic tanks in our county. Most of it's the sewer system. So that does change a little bit about what we can and can't do. But our responsibility is to make sure that the water quality in general is high. So we have to work with the sewage treatment plants and everybody else who's actually monitoring the way that water is handled in the county.
And as the Allegheny County Health Department goes about its efforts to monitor these things and to enforce standards, do you feel at this point that the department has the resources to enforce all of the state and county regulations under your purview?
You know, I think we have adequate, but I would say as things change, that's when the challenges begin. So, for example, with all of the stormwater issues, to be able to monitor everything going on, we probably don't have all the resources that we would need to be able to do that.
And when it comes to dealing with those stormwater issues and water treatment, the issues involving Alka-San, our listeners are certainly very concerned and have expressed their concerns. We received a tweet from GASP today, and it states that gray is okay, but we're keen on green. We support as much green infrastructure as possible. So many co-benefits.
So first of all, shout out to my friends at GASP.
Okay.
I have to say that, you know, we have a great advocacy community in Allegheny, which I think is imperative where environmental health is concerned. And we really value their input. With that said, as a regulatory organization, we can't always move with the alacrity that they would like us to move. I would tell you that from what I've learned, and again, I'm fairly new to this subject, the big challenge is that green infrastructure is not going to be the full solution, that you're probably going to have some combination of whatever's called green and gray.
And that would be why?
There's just too much water. This area, we have a lot of water. Sometimes I say to people, too bad we can't sell our water to my friends in California because they're dealing with the opposite end of the spectrum. And we think with global warming, we're probably going to have more water. So this is a very challenging area, a very complex issue in terms of how we deal with this. And unfortunately, much of the infrastructure that we have to handle the water is extremely antiquated. And so now we're really facing trying to rebuild that infrastructure across the entire county.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Our guest is Karen Hacker. She is the director of the Allegheny County Health Department. You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Let's go to the phones. We have Carlana from Pittsburgh online. Carlana, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi. My first comment is that the public health system has been underfunded and understaffed for the past 30 to 40 years. So we're in very deep trouble in terms of if we had an emergency, the public health system is simply doesn't have enough funding, budget, staff to respond. So everybody should understand that this is about cutting budgets and cutting programs and regulations. It's very dangerous for our health. Secondly, I wanted to bring up the issue that the U.S. Coast Guard is on the verge of giving permission for fracking fluids, the waste, the toxic waste, to be transported on barges in our rivers, which is an extremely dangerous idea, but it saves the natural gas industry a lot of money. And right now we have a problem with ice jams, and if a barge full of toxic fracking waste water was in a barge and got hit with one of these ice jams and the floods and ice jams together, we could easily have a situation like they're having in West Virginia around Charleston.
That's a very good point, Carlana. Let me jump in, if I may,
okay.
Because you raise a number of good points and you point to a number of potential very serious scenarios. Let's talk about Charleston, West Virginia. Not far from here, citizens have been going through a water crisis that started last week when a chemical used in coal processing leaked into the Elk River. What concerns, Karen Hacker, do you have about that happening here? And are you satisfied that Allegheny County is prepared to deal with a similar crisis?
So first of all, my heart goes out to the folks in West Virginia, obviously, who are dealing with this. And these types of crises, we try our best to prepare for them. We do have an emergency preparedness group. We work very effectively with the county emergency preparedness folks as well as the city. But I'm not going to disagree with the caller because the fact is public health in this whole country is grossly underfunded to be able to deal with the kinds of things that we're up against. That doesn't mean that we're not dealing with scenarios, that we're not trying to figure out how we would respond to these kinds of things on a regular basis. But I do think that the American public in general does not have a very good understanding for what public health is responsible for or what we do. And I would say right now, talking to many of my colleagues in other states, the fact that I'm actually here and being supported to grow the department is actually quite unique. That doesn't mean that I'm getting all the resources that I will need to make this a fantastic department. But I got to tell you, I was talking to colleagues in Kansas the other day, and they are being cut and shrinking as we speak right now. And we were seeing certainly the same things happening in my former state of Massachusetts.
And when it comes to emergency preparedness, as you know, being from the Boston area or having lived there for some 25 years, the Boston Marathon bombing sent many innocent and unsuspecting people to the hospital. We have our own marathon here in Pittsburgh. It's coming up again in May. And we hope and pray that something like that never happens here. But if it does, what are the emergency plans that the county has in place for something like that?
So there's scenario planning that goes on a regular basis. And I can't speak for all the detailed plans, obviously still being somewhat of a newcomer to the area. But should something like that happen, we've got to work very closely with the delivery system. Having watched what happened in Massachusetts, we did make a difference there in life and death. And part of that was because we had done a lot of practicing beforehand in terms of what these scenarios might look like. And our delivery system was incredible accepting people. The other thing that really made a big difference was having people on site. And I'm certain that the marathon here also has a tent with, you know, available personnel. And I could guarantee that given what happened in Massachusetts, that any personnel at any marathon these days has gotten additional education and trying to think about what that was. Because remember, those people were not prepared for that type of illness to show up in their tents. They were expecting the typical things you see in a marathon. So my guess is, assuming that those folks are in place, which I could bet are all there, it's then the ability to have planned in advance. And we actually have passed all of our credentialing for being public health ready for emergency preparedness.
Obviously, we all remember where we were and what we were doing on that day. I believe it was April 15th, if I'm not mistaken.
I was actually on my way to teach a class, and I drove up through the I was on the highway. I drove up. It was right in Copley Square where I came up off of the highway.
In the Back Bay area of Boston.
And then I remember looking around and seeing people kind of start crying and people start running in that direction. I had no idea what was going on. And then the police started pushing traffic away. And I remember calling my husband, and must have been really close to that time frame because I was still able to get through on my cell phone, and saying, I think something happened. What's going on? And he said, oh, my God, turned on the television, said, oh, my God, there's been a bomb. So I remember it extremely clearly.
And were you able to get to that area or do anything to?
Well, again, their whole emergency preparedness,
right,
they don't
sure.
need extra people coming in and trying to help. That would just cause additional chaos. No, mainly what we needed to do is get out of the area.
Sure. Let's take one more call before we go to break. We have Jennifer in Pittsburgh. Jennifer, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for calling in. Go ahead.
My question for Ms. Hacker is, you said that your department looks at the smoke coming out of facilities during the day to see, you know, if it looks like there's a problem there. I'm wondering what you do about evenings and weekends.
So the evenings are really challenging. I think that's an excellent point. And this is one of the areas where we have monitors. And so we can look at the actual monitors, of course, in terms of what's going on. But we don't have the visual ability in the nighttime. And that does put us at a disadvantage.
Jennifer, thank you for that call. We do need to take a break. We are talking with Karen Hacker, director of the Allegheny County Health Department here on Essential Pittsburgh, and we will continue the conversation. You can join our conversation by calling 412-246-2002. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Our guest is Karen Hacker. She's director of the Allegheny County Health Department. She took over that job just a few months ago, and she's here to talk about issues she's hoping to address, what her priorities are, and those of the department in 2014. You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is ESSPGH@WESA.FM, and you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at #EPLive. When it comes to dealing with, for example, sewage issues, plumbing issues, food safety, housing issues, how is the health department set up to identify problems, or is it mostly complaint-driven?
It's mostly complaint-driven at this point. And so when a complaint comes in, it goes to the appropriate department, and then they send out inspectors to do the investigations. Air is obviously a little different because with air, it's based on our own monitoring systems. Water is also a little bit different because most of that actually we have an ongoing monitoring system for water quality that most of the plants have this type of equipment, and we receive the reports from that.
You have set your sights on dealing with obesity issues here, and I know that you are unveiling a comprehensive initiative next week, but let us in on a little of what you are looking at doing. For example, when we talk about, or when you talk about dealing with obesity, are you looking at doing things like banning 16-ounce sodas, for example? What is the plan?
So I think the first plan is, and we've already really started a lot of this work, is trying to figure out who's doing what in the county. There turns out to be a large number of smaller organizations that actually have set their sights on various different elements of obesity prevention that include everything from edible gardens to fitness types of activities to environmental kinds of challenges, you know. So we've got Bike Pittsburgh. We've got some great things going on. So my first strategy is really to figure out who's doing what and try to do essentially a gap analysis to figure out where things are lacking and where we can make strides. I'm a big data person. The other thing I wanted to do is get hold of the data and try as hard as I can to figure out where are some of our hot spots in the county. We have been looking at the school data. The schools do report the BMI for students on an annual basis to the state. And that has helped us begin to see where certain districts have challenges and then to begin to talk with them about how they can really think about more local policies. I mean, I think some of the policies you're talking about, you know, the big gulp, those kinds of things, some of the – there have not been as many of those that have been shown to be effective. In fact, one of the most effective policies right now is if we could get schools to do 4 15-minute increments of exercise during the day, that could actually make a big difference. I don't know if you saw the announcement. I think Let's Move, the national Let's Move made the other day about the amount of calories that have been taken out of fast food. I mean, those are actually kind of exciting things if you think about it. And I don't think that we as a population do very well with acute kinds of changes. I think we do better with incremental change on this matter. And so I think our objective is to try to surround our population with as many healthy opportunities as possible and to really get everybody seeing this as their problem, from schools to hospitals to community organizations. But when it really comes down to it, it's still going to be about the individual deciding to make those right choices.
You've lived in Boston, Chicago, L.A., and worked in all of those places. What are you seeing there or in other parts of the country that we could possibly emulate here?
Well, I think what we certainly saw in Boston was the active coalitions coming together. And I think that there's incredible possibility for that here. I think that there's a lot of activity that can be done in schools, and I know some of that's happening, but I don't know that it's consistent across all schools, changing the school climate in particular and the school food, obviously. But then I think that there are some incredibly interesting strategies that people are looking at, everything from financial incentives in terms of literally what grocery stores are doing, product placement. There's some great stuff that's being done in cafeterias where they still have all the products, but if they put the lower calorie product at eye level versus having to step down,
it actually, hide the donuts,
actually seems to make a difference. And using strategies like they use red, green, yellow kind of things and tell people, you know, you should have at least two of the greens, you know, maybe one of the yellows and as few as possible of the reds, does seem to have some impact. But, you know, we're up against it. I mean, between what we see in advertisement and what the, you know, where do you do your shopping? If you do your shopping at some of the big box stores, everything's in large volume. And
right.
We like that, you know.
Well, we're encouraged to buy that way.
We are encouraged to buy that, and we like to get a bargain, right?
We have lots of people with questions for you, Karen Hacker. Let's go to Will from the North Side. Will, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, and welcome, Dr. Hacker. Two quick questions. One is, Dr. Hacker, how do you envision you and your team interacting with the issues of violence in the community from a public health perspective? And secondarily, how will your department interact with the School of Health and other colleges and universities and proprietary schools in the area? I will hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Will.
So on both notes, first of all, you may or may not be aware that before I got here, the county exec actually established a commission to look at violence prevention, and I happen to be the chair of that commission. And so I kind of jumped into it. Now, that said, I have a pretty good experience in terms of the 90s in Boston when there was a tremendous amount done around violence prevention. So I have a pretty good knowledge base of what is evidence-based and what could be done. Our job for the commission is to come up with a series of recommendations by, my guess is, the spring, sometime late spring. I am personally very interested in seeing individual communities particularly pull together their youth-serving organizations along with their police organizations to really begin to establish a sense of, I hate to say it, but intolerance for violence in these communities. And I think one of the biggest challenges for us as the county is we might be able to identify evidence-based practices, but ultimately this becomes a very local issue. And each community does have to come together to really be able to figure out how to do this work. I think street workers are a really important piece of this. Community policing can be a really important piece of this. We all need to play our roles.
How much does addressing mental health issues play into this? Certainly that relates to or is partly accountable for some of the violence that we see. But as we were talking before the show started, you have some real concerns about where we are with mental health and the resources to deal with those who are mentally ill in our society.
You know, and I think there's different types of mental illness also. And I think some of the biggest challenges around violence, you know, so first of all, I really think it's a mistake for us to connote violence and mental health together. I think that that does a disservice to our mentally ill populations, many of whom are nonviolent but have chronic mental health disorders. There's no question, and there's been a fabulous homicide review that came out of the University of Pittsburgh School of Public Health. There was another question that was asked about our relationship with the School of Public Health. And just on that note, I am actually faculty at the School of Public Health, and we're working very closely with folks there, and we just hope to enhance that environment because they can do things we can't do, and we need to – they need to help us learn what works best. But I think that the issue with mental health, particularly for those who have mental health issues who are incarcerated and then come back into the community, there does seem to be, you know, I hate to say it, but there's a lot of recidivism that goes on. And some of our violence certainly is caused by people who've already been incarcerated and come out. And right now, there are some great county programs that the Department of Human Services is working on to try to make that connection between people coming out of prison who have mental health issues and getting into treatment. But if a person serves their time, it ultimately still is up to them to get the services that are available to them. I think that's a big challenge for us, particularly with the state, because those types of relationships don't necessarily exist.
And what about with regard to the safety net that that should or needs to be in place?
So one of our challenges is we have a safety net that's fraying, to say the least. Someone said to me it's not really the safety net because a net infers that it's going to catch you when you fall, and it would be hard for us to be able to actually say that. Our federally qualified health centers right now, they struggle every day to be able to meet the needs of their populations, and they do mental health, they do dental, they do basic physical health. There's a lot of concern that under the governor's plan for Medicaid expansion that they wouldn't be able to see some of the patients that they're currently seeing. And they have specialized services for this group of population that they've been serving forever. So there's a lot of concern, I think, that I personally have, particularly as we begin to insure people under the Affordable Care Act, about making sure that those systems are still in place and valid and valuable for the populations we're trying to serve.
412-246-2002. We have a few minutes left with our guest, Karen Hacker, who is director of the Allegheny County Health Department. Let's go to Stan in Forest Hills. Stan, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Stan, are you there? And apparently we lost Stan. Let's go to Bill in Banksville. Bill, are you there?
Is this Bill in Banksville?
Well, are you Bill in Banksville?
Yes. I want to challenge that somewhat irrational comment on using barges on the river for fracking fluid. I'm a long-term environmentalist.
Bill, you might have a better time formulating your thoughts if you turn your radio down, sir.
Okay.
Do you want to go and do that? And we'll wait.
Yes.
He's referring to a comment that was made earlier by one of our callers and has some concerns there, so we will let him comment.
I'm not of firm belief what's the best thing to do, but one, the ice jams is a total red herring. They're not going to be operating where these ice jams occur. Secondly, the alternatives, we're going to be shipping fracking fluid. The alternatives are whether you're going to be using these barges with the double hulls or whether you're going to be shipping by rail. The rail is along the river. Or are you going to be using the highways, Ohio River Boulevard, Route 28? They're right along the river. So if you have accidents, the fluids are going to go right into the river. So the question is, what do you think is safest? And it takes a rational look at the alternatives of whether barges or rail or the tanker trucks on the highways are most likely to have accidents, and that's all what I have to say.
Okay. Well, thank you, Bill. And it could be fracking fluid, or it could be, as with the crisis in Charleston, West Virginia, it could be a chemical used in coal processing that leaked into the river. When it comes to transporting hazardous materials, what is the best way to do that? What are the concerns that the health department might have?
So I think the rational approach is the way to go. And I don't have the information that I could actually make that guess, because I think part of what needs to be done to be able to make that assessment is, in fact, some research that sort of says what is the cost benefit of doing any of these types of things. I think that the challenge is these materials do have to be transported. And so figuring out what the best strategy is and how to protect our citizenry, that's our job.
I wanted to, before we run out of time, I wanted to address the issue of smoking. A surprisingly large percentage of people in the Pittsburgh region smoke. What are you preparing to do to confront that?
So first of all, I have to say, coming from the East Coast, I was a little bit surprised at how many people were still smoking here. So that definitely took me by surprise. I hadn't seen it in a long time. And I know that we have a variety of legislation and issues, and you can't smoke in restaurants. But clearly, there's still about a quarter of our population in the adult population that's smoking, and about 18% of youth are still smoking. So I think we really need to increase our efforts in terms of both education and promotion. And one of the biggest challenges, and I think the whole smoking, and you know, we use smoking in public health as a success, right? We've really decreased the number of smokers over time, and we've used an incredible variety of strategies. We've used regulation, we've used policies, we've used individual types of strategies. One of the things that I think is happening now in the healthcare system, which I think is very promising, is we need to get our providers to be asking about smoking at every single visit in the adult population and to take it seriously and to help those folks who are smoking.
Don't do that already?
I think some folks do and some don't. I can't speak for everyone. We know now that this last year, in terms of federal regulation, they are going to be reporting on smoking for all of their patient population. So that gives them the data right there to be able to look at it and to be able to formulate a plan for increasing their success. There was an article, I think, in the paper yesterday where one of the delivery systems was talking about their own workforce and how they were really working with them to get those people into cessation programs. One of the challenges in public health is each time you do a new strategy, you sort of carve out another piece of the population. And unfortunately, when you get down to a certain level, you're dealing with people who are pretty difficult to change. And so how do we decrease any barriers for that population and offer them some of the strategies? And one group, for example, that is known to have a high risk of smoking are people with chronic mental health issues. So I would ask, are our mental health providers also thinking about smoking and how to curtail smoking in that population?
Can you speak to disparities with regard to cigarette smoking in Allegheny County? What are you seeing?
I think we are seeing that men are smoking more than women, and that people in who are lower income and lower education are smoking. And we also are seeing that blacks are smoking more than whites.
So, and why is that? Have you been able to trace that back to any significant factors?
Well, I think of these risk factors as clustering. And so we have the same folks who are dealing, you know, unfortunately, who have issues around obesity, also being our smokers. Of course, then you have them stop smoking, then they eat more and they can get more. You know, I mean, these are the kind of things we're dealing with. I think that, you know, I have to tell everyone, and I know that there are rules and regulations around this, but my first visit to the casino was quite startling. To look at folks who were in there, who were smoking, and the other kinds of habits. You know, they're sitting there drinking, they're smoking. It's 12 o'clock during the day.
Are you surprised? You know, as I've mentioned a couple times now, you've lived in other parts of the country, as have I, and we see in other parts of the country states outlawing smoking altogether. You cannot smoke in a restaurant or a bar, whether they serve food or not. There's a lot of leeway for businesses here.
Do those
laws need to change?
Well, there are some, and I think I haven't been here long enough to know all the nuances of the laws. Again, someone said to me the other day, if you get the casinos to actually ban smoking, you'd be doing us a big favor. But I understand that there are other challenges to being able to balance that. So I have some learning to do before I can actually tell you the best strategies.
In about 15 seconds or so that we have left here, what do you hope to have accomplished by the end of this year, 2014? If we're having this conversation a year from now, what do you want to point to?
So I really would like to be pointing to some progress in obesity. I think that there are some other areas that I'd really like to focus on, for example, making sure that more people in our county are insured.
Our guest has been Karen Hacker, director of the Allegheny County Health Department. Thanks so much for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Coming up, knitting is big business, and that's no yarn. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.